Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along Show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 197, brought to you either by Kenny Was Right or Hotter Than a Box of Stolen Checks.
Is it hot where you guys are at?
It's hot.
It's fucking hot.
It was 102 today here.
Yeah, it's been like 90, like right around 90 to 92, something like that.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
Yep. Well, on tonight's show, we're going to run through things as normal. There's some new stuff. There's some not new stuff. There's some things we're going to talk about, some things we're going to miss, and as always, some things we're going to get wrong. No one cares, and points mean nothing.
So what was I right about? Are we going to get into that later?
Just the show number.
Oh.
We'll get into it later. I'll talk about what I've done.
Okay, well, did a ride today with Andrea. We went and rode e-bikes somewhere. I had been in a truck, and she had never gone. And, yeah, that is kind of the gist of it. Went up towards Hancock and parked at the OHV staging area with vault toilets. If you know, you know, and if you don't, well, you don't care. But we rode up Hancock Road to Pomeroy Lakes Road. And rode all the way up to a little over 12,000. No snow on the road. Things were clear and dry with the exception of runoff. You know, it's not like the road was soggy from snow melts or anything.
What's the highest peak in Colorado?
Mount Elbert.
Yeah, 14.3.
Okay, but there's a shitload that are like 14, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of 14ers, but 14.3 is the highest. I just saw something actually earlier today. Let me change Google tabs because I was going to read this at a different time.
And while Matt's doing that, I will say if you come out to Tourist in Colorado and you want to hike up to the top of a mountain, but if, like me, you dislike being around other people, choose a 13,000-foot mountain. It can literally be like, so Mount Ouray, which is not too far from here, is like 60 feet shy of 14. And if you go up there on a weekend, you might see one or two other people. Maybe.
Yeah, that's good advice. That's crazy. My other piece of advice would be that if you want to come to Utah to visit, I would go to Colorado.
We're pretty packed right now.
No, you got room. I was there the other day. You're fine.
You weren't here the other day.
I peeked my head in.
So I was wrong. I found something. 10 tallest mountains in the continental U.S. So this excludes Alaska. I don't know if continental is the right way to word that.
I'll be right back. Sorry. All right. Sorry about that. There were background noises.
Oh, yeah. So I don't know. This is something that I'm trying. Yeah. So I'm really frustrated because this article got it totally wrong, and it's something I've been trying to be better about. It says the article is named correctly, but the infographic is named incorrectly. So it's the 10 tallest mountains in the contiguous United States, but their infographic says continental, which would include Alaska, which makes this infographic wrong. So tallest is in, a different way to put it, 8 of the top 10 are in Colorado. Whitney is the winner in California. And then Elbert is 1440. Massive is 1428. Harvard is 14420. Nice.
We don't have to go through all of it.
Well,
I mean, but
hear me out. Where I'm going is to piggyback on what Andrea said. Like, if you go to Mount Elbert, it's going to be fucking packed.
Yeah, like there are, like you will hike up to the top of this mountain and there will be like 20 or 30 other people up there just hanging around, or just people on the trail or whatever. And yeah, I mean, if you're into like...
I probably ran into more than 20 people on Shavano that day on a weekday.
Yeah, so like teeners are super popular, and it's weird. Like there's this niche of people that want to just hike all of the 14ers. And if you're ever around them on top of a 14er, they'll like talk shit on some of them. Like the trail to whatever just fucking sucks, and this mountain sucks. And it's like, dude, you're on top of a damn mountain. Shut up and look around. Like,
if you're bored,
holy cow,
you should go look at the Google reviews for mountains. They're hilarious.
Oh, yeah. That's like you're listening to...
The view was
to...
not as good as I expected. 3 out of 5 stars. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Well, that's exactly... Like, I am dead serious. I'm not even joking. Like, that's how these people are. And it kind of turned me off of like hiking 14ers because like, it's like, man, I lived in fucking Memphis most of my life. Like being on top of Itty Mountain above treeline is fucking awesome.
When I ride my dirt bike to like the top of basically a garbage mound out here in Utah somewhere, and it's like some shit land that nobody cares about because it, you know, whatever, it's not that pretty or whatever. And yeah, some half blown out road. And I get up there and I'm like, ah, this is pretty cool. It's
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's like pretty cool. I just like climbed up this little mini mountain. It was awesome.
Well, to answer Kenny's question, we have 58 14ers and 637 13ers.
Yeah, there you go. So climb some 13ers.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, find one that's, you know, and you can definitely find information about access to them and stuff because a lot of them don't have, because they're 13ers and they're less popular, they don't have a trail going up to them. So, yeah, like just, there's like 13ers.com or something. There's also 13ers.com. And
everybody's homework, yeah, everyone's homework is to go to a YouTube channel called Forestry Forest. I think that's what it's called.
All right.
He's just a cool dude. I think he's Canadian and he just lives in his van with his dog. And his dog is that you guys will die when you see this guy's dog. It is, I'm not one to usually say this. Like, I like dogs, but I'm not like a dog lover, if that makes sense. This dog will like melt your heart. It is insane. He just hangs out in his jacket all day but he climbs gnarly stuff. And his dog, it's a little Marley.
A terrier.
Yeah. Some type of terrier, I think. Anyway, go watch Forestry Forest. He is amazing.
Oh my gosh. My God. Matt just pulled up a picture and
oh my God.
That is adorable.
But that dog rips. That dog climbs all of this shit with him. And then when the dog gets tired or they're doing some gnarly creek crossing or he's doing like full blown like ice pick climbing at the end to get to some peak, he just throws his dog in his jacket and the dog just hangs out there. It's awesome.
Yeah, so terriers don't
reason I bring him up is because he's the fucking real deal. Like this dude, there's not any like goofy editing or like a support crew. This dude is hardcore as shit and downplays stuff. You should see some of the times he does on some of these climbs. They're bananas. He does things that like hardcore ass people take 3 days and he's like, yeah, I did it in a day and it was okay. He just downplays everything. It's really gnarly.
Yeah.
Well, dude, you got to get little Rocco home for dinner.
So what I'm getting at is this dude is the anti Colorado 14er crowd. He finds some obscure ass shit and it's all insanely cool and there's almost never anybody out there.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I do. I just don't always climb the mountain that I'm close to, but I get real fucking close to the mountain.
Yeah, so we went out for a ride. We parked at Hancock. We rode up Hancock Road. We went up Pomeroy Lakes, which I had previously been up in the Land Rover during the Rover Rally last year. God, was that?
We've been going
year?
Seriously yeah, off the rails on tangents here, but I gotta ask, do you still have the Rover?
Unfortunately, I do. It's still very for sale.
Gotcha. Continue.
And the reason it's for sale, and I'll just reiterate this, is I am not going to have fun driving off-road until I'm extremely wealthy and I have a tow rig and a buggy that I can roll over. And I don't think that's ever going to happen, so I don't need a vehicle that I don't want to drive because it doesn't do the things I want to do. I need to sell that and put that money towards a vehicle that I can drive my dirt bike school places and ride it as if it were a buggy because, yeah, it's tougher and it's smaller. And
Dirt bike, you mean not?
Yeah, my dirt bike.
Okay.
Yeah, not a bad plan.
Nope. So, yeah, we went up Pomeroy Lake and
it was just really fucking nice up there.
It was really pretty up there. I'm not in love with the mullet. Lebo, just not in love with it.
That's totally fair.
Don't really know how else to put it other than I think the chain stays too short and I think the rear wheel should be 29. And if the chain stay length is equal to my 29 Stumpy, 29 wheel won't fit in there because motor and different swing arm or chain stay, seat stay design, all that stuff. It's not a swing arm because it's two pieces. But yeah, it makes power so you can go places that you can't ride your regular bike. But then as soon as you hit something too big with the rear wheel, it gets all jammed up because it's a little 27.5 wheel. And I was running a 2.6 tire today. I threw that tire back on to see if I could solve that thing we were talking about where I didn't like the 2.4 tire. It had nothing to do with the fact that I definitely put a hole in that tape when I was installing a double down tire with a liner and I don't have any sealant or tape at home. and my other wheel was just sitting there with a tire on it. And I'm like, I'm just going to swap my whole ass wheel. But I just, it makes power and then it gets hung up. And if it doesn't get hung up, the amount of, like, on the way up, the amount of effort I have to put in to getting the front wheel to stay planted and I'm still not successful is a little bit disappointing. So, I know I'm wrong, and I know no one's going to agree with me, but I think it needs, like, I'm ultra intrigued by a 500 millimeter chainstay on anything that's not a, you know, I wouldn't want that on my Levo, but I would love to try a hardtail with a 500 mil chainstay, and I really would love to ride, like, a, I guess you'd call this, like, a mid-tail full suspension e-bike. I'd be really excited to see that, and
I don't even know what the geometry of my e-bike is. I just, it's like, hey, this is on sale cheap. Do you want it? I was like, yeah.
But yours is 2.9 front and rear.
Mine is, yeah.
Hang on one second. Sorry again. Okay, I'm back. Sorry.
That's all right.
And I just looked it up, and the Taro X does have a longer chainstay, the more commuter-oriented bike, so I find that to be really interesting. And then I guess I should look and see if, in all of my complaining, I don't know. I wonder
if that company that makes that crazy one-piece aluminum rear swing arm, what bike were they making that for? Was it for a Levo?
No, it was for Stumpy 15.
Oh, okay.
Which will come up again in this show.
All right.
By the way, have you, not the Stumpy 15 wheel, not Cascade components, have you built one of those aluminum Levo 4s yet, Kenny?
Not personally. I only get called in when things go wrong these days. So,
well, I'll tell you what went wrong with that bike. It weighs 58 pounds.
Yeah, they were not concerned about weight on this revision of Levo. Aluminum or carbon?
I wonder, I don't even know how much my e-bike weighs.
I think yours weighs 53.
I'm going to say I've been incredibly happy. My Levo SL that I had was a absolutely fantastic bike. Was it a little bit down on power and battery capacity, and was the motor a little bit whiny? Yeah. But as a bicycle and like as a whole thing, that thing was awesome. And my Kinevo SL is the same thing. I kind of really like it. It's a really, really good bike. And by the way, yeah, I want to point out my Kinevo SL weighs 40 pounds, 41, something like that, somewhere in that ballpark.
And if I rode that bike for 12 minutes, the rear wheel would probably die. I mean, you're a small human, Kenny.
No, I mean, it's got control SLs with 2.6s. You can't hurt it.
Does it have an insert?
No.
Okay, then.
Yeah. Yeah. If I rim dong, I've done something wrong.
Okay. All right.
Continue.
All right.
Continue.
Matt, is that everything that you've done?
Yeah. I just went for a bike ride, and even with the bike issues, I mean, the bike worked fine. I'm just, me and that bike aren't really meshing well. It's just really annoying. Yeah. I don't want to sound whiny, but like, I think that's the really cool part of having a demo bike is, there is no envy effect. It's no, I've spent this much money for it, I have to love it. It's what I find disappointing is the bike could go a lot more places. And I think if it just had like a little bit longer chainstay and a full size rear wheel, I think it would go those places more easily.
It'd be cool if they made it swappable.
It would be cool if it was, you know, because the Stumpy 15 is 29. And can be set up mullet. It'd be really cool if they shipped the Levo's mullet and they could be set up.
I think that's probably the way to go, right? I think having the smaller wheel for the average person, just because people dump truck those bikes into shit and a lot of inexperienced riders are on them. So I think having the stronger rear wheel is probably a smarter move.
Yeah, but I don't think people are blowing up rear wheels every day. I mean, I don't know.
I've seen a lot of broken Gen 2 wheels. Levo wheels.
Oh, I was going to say, none of the wheels that I've seen, I'm not in the shop that much, but none of the wheels that I have seen in the shop that are blown up are on e-bikes.
Yeah, we used to see a lot of blown up 29 Gen 2 rear wheels.
Well, for us, though, they aren't legalized on all the trails yet, and there is a stigma that they're not for real riders. So it's just this whole machismo bullshit stuff that I don't have the bandwidth to get into. But long story short, if we had shredders doing hot laps on Hooligan, yeah, we'd be seeing blown up wheels. But it's a lot of, you know, retirees just putzing around is what we have.
Yeah. I don't even think, and we'll change it up. I'll go next since I'm talking. Well, and also, like, kind of the most interesting thing I've done ties into what Matt was just talking about.
Oh, and we saw some marmots.
We did see marmots, and they were living in an old mining cabin. And that was funny to see a marmot run across the floor of, like, a broke-down mining cabin. But where was I going with that? Oh, yeah. Like, I don't even know if, even if our trails were legal in Salida, like, I honestly don't think I would ride the e-bike on them because it would just be kind of boring. I know, I've said it before, like, I like taking it places that I couldn't physically ride on a, you know, just a non-motorized bicycle. And that's what today was. Like, there's a reason why I've never ridden my bike up Pomeroy Lake Road, because you'd be pushing probably a mile of the however many miles it was. And, you know, I don't really shy away from hike a bike. You know, I, not knowing, like, kind of what's up there, like, I didn't want to commit to just riding and pushing a bike up there for a few hours. You know, maybe it's just like a big side-by-side hellhole or something, but it turns out it's pretty fucking cool. And yeah, I'm not in very good bike shape right now. That's also a thing. And I want to know, like, Matt, do you have, like, the app on your phone where you can modify the assist levels of your e-bike?
Nope.
Okay. Because I want to know what your assist level is for your lowest power setting. Because I don't think I'm in as bad a shape as how I felt when we were riding, like, just up the first part of the road.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can get it. We can figure it out at some point.
And by the way, if I have to listen to one more whiny-ass e-bike person who has no fucking idea what they're talking about tell me that their e-bike is broken because they rode with a group of six other e-bike riders, and when they got done with the ride, they were working harder than the other people, or their battery was 5% lower than everybody else, that it needs to be warrantied.
Oh, God.
Dead serious. Twice a week.
Oh, God.
Yep.
Now, mine in eco mode, like, that battery lasts forever. And I used that mostly today. And what I ended up doing that worked pretty well was I just have a 1050 cassette. I don't have the 52. So if I was in, you know, the lowest power setting and I got to the 50 and I'm like, I got to shift or I got to walk, I would just bump the power up like one level and use that to get up like the next, you know, 100 yards of road that was really fucking steep and rocky, and then bump it back down once I got to the top and kind of caught my breath. So that worked out pretty well. It was just like having an extra shifter. It was like an extra granny gear.
There you go.
All right.
But other than that, yeah, our ride today was awesome. And there's something about that area. And you all know I'm into like some woohoo-y shit. And I just don't talk about it as much anymore. I feel like if past lives are a thing, I was probably alive in that area at some point in a different person. Like when I
like a marmot?
Go to that, maybe, I don't know, or a mountain goat or something. I don't know, but it's weird. Like anytime, and it's that like specific area of the mountains. And every time I go there, I get the same feeling that you get like when you get back to your house after like some long, gnarly road trip where maybe you didn't have a lot of fun and stuff kind of sucked and like you're just so fucking happy to be home. Like, as soon as I get up into that area, like, that's the feeling that I get. I'm like, I made it back. I'm home now. Like, everything is awesome. And, like, this is my place. And it's just, it's weird. Like, it's, I don't know. It's real odd. And if any of our listeners are into some woo-hoo-y shit like I am, then, yeah, maybe it was like I was like something in a past life up there. Who knows? And that's how I came to this part of Colorado is some kind of universal guidance.
Yeah, mine might not be quite as woohooey, but I get that quite a bit, just solo on the moto out in the middle of fucking nowhere doing some cool thing. And then you kind of like realize where you are, and I'll just stop for a second, just kind of look around, and I'll usually say out loud, like, this is fucking dope. And then I just get back on and keep riding. Like, it's just awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking awesome out there. It's great to be in the middle of nowhere. But in non-woohooey shit, garden is good. Meat chickens are good. I've done some elk scouting. I'm going to spend, so today's Thursday, tomorrow is Friday, and it is the solstice tomorrow. I'm going to go out and do some more elk scouting in an area I haven't been to, and I'm going to camp out in my truck. Got the new platform built, going to test that out. I think it's going to be really nice, and yeah, it's going to be fun.
Did you get your hand fixed?
I got cortisone injections in my right
hand.
You
mentioned that before. Are you going to not do surgery?
No, I'm going to do surgery because the cortisone is going to wear off and it's going to hurt, you know, as bad as it did before. But yeah, the cortisone injections are good. I mean, my hand still goes numb some when I'm riding, but it's like 10% of, if that much, 5 to 10% of what it was before. Like, it's just one of those things where I can like take my right hand off the bar for like 5 seconds and it feels normal again. Whereas before, like, I literally couldn't ride with my right hand on the handlebar. As soon as I put my hand on the handlebar, my hand was just like, nah, fuck you. So, yeah, it's like way better. Like, I barely noticed it today. Before, I had to just stop riding altogether. I was pretty used to just, you know, taking my right hand off whenever there's a smooth part of the trail and just kind of like, you know, shaking it out for a few seconds. And yeah, so like, I don't even really notice it. So that's really good. But the kind of the, I didn't want to, like Matt and I talked about this today, I don't want to call it disappointing, like, but it is a thing. Doctor did say after the cortisone injection, or the PA that I was talking to, she said, you know, how does it feel? And I was like, I mean, it's still like, there are a few things that bother it, but, you know, it's a lot better. She said, you know, a cortisone injection is pretty much, she said, that gives us a really good idea of how you're going to feel after surgery. So it is likely that I have some permanent nerve damage, but, you know, I can live with how it is now with the cortisone, you know, and like I said, the cortisone's eventually going to wear off and it's going to hurt again, but hopefully that doesn't happen before surgery, or if it does, it's not too long before surgery. So yeah, that's the hand update of the week. But yeah, I've been, I think I'm past the gabapentin withdrawal. Still not sleeping great, but I don't have the anxiety that I was having. At least, I mean, I have like my normal amount of anxiety, not just anxiety about, you know, like nothing. So that's, oh yeah, and back to Kenny was right. So I have, a listener sent me some of the Corvus. Matt, do you remember what model that was of the Corvus bars?
Nope.
There's some Corvus bars. They have a lot of back sweep, but not so much that they're just...
Sweet 16.
Yeah, sweet 16. So I'm guessing that's 16 degrees of back sweep.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's not like a Jones bar or something that's like real kooky. But I do have them, you know, as I was trying to ride some when my hand was hurting a lot. And so in an attempt to relieve pain, I raised the bars way up and put those handlebars on. And they have some rise. So it's not great climbing. Like, I literally, on steep stuff, like, I can hear my front tire kind of just, like, brushing the ground as it's trying to lose traction. And that part kind of sucks. But going downhill, it felt good. So that's why I was saying Kenny was right about high handlebars and handling. I don't necessarily like them uphill, but they were nice downhill.
I mean, I personally think you should run as high of a bar as you can tolerate, as long as it gets along with your climbing, really, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's barely tolerable climbing. I will probably drop it like 5 to 10 millimeters just to play around with it and see if it's better for climbing and still, you know, reasonably good downhill. But yeah, I really like the bars, and I like them up higher for going downhill. One thing I did notice, so we had a specialized demo day at the shop a while back, and the rep that was there had some extra tires. And they were like Butcher gravity casing tires. And these fuckers will like stand up. They look like a wire bead tire. They're so stiff. And I put those on my e-bike just to try them out. And they're tubes, so they're narrow. But what I noticed is something that's always bugged me going downhill on the e-bike is you have so much momentum because you have, you know, it's like such a heavy bike. That when you're front with, I had a 2.5 or 2.6 Assegai on the front before. And
2.6.
Okay. 2.6 Assegai. So a big chonker of a tire. When the front wheel would hit a loose rock, it's like there was just a lot more tire there on the loose rock. And so when the rock moved, it moved the whole front end of the bike more and was sketchy. And with these, they're so stiff and they're narrow. I think what happens is like you touch the loose rock, and for one, there's just less tire touching it. So it just doesn't affect, and it's just a really stiff tire. I think it also just kind of like gets between rocks and more moves them out of the way than it does rolling on top of them and letting them move out from under and potentially, you know, take your front wheel in a different direction. So I thought that was really interesting. I thought the 2.3s were going to suck on there. They don't suck at all. And that is a super grippy tire. I don't think that tread's going to last long on the rear wheel if I ride it a lot, because it is a super soft compound. But yeah, like I was actually pretty impressed with that setup. Like I was, yeah. I mean, I was just really surprised. It's like what Matt said. It's like the opposite of the envy effect. It's like I have no skin in this game of wanting to like this tire, but I just have to like it because it just worked really well. So, all right, that's it for me. Kenny, what you been doing?
Nothing super exciting. What did I do last weekend? I did a dual sport ride on the Husqvarna 350. Mostly street, definitely a decent bit of gravel road. I met up with some other people, and one of the guys showed up on a Triumph Scrambler 400. So arguably like pretty street oriented bike, had 70, 30 tires on it, probably more street oriented. And I was like, hey man, we're going to like, you know, do some semi gnarly stuff. And he's like, oh yeah, I'm fine with that. I'm like, okay. And yeah, he, for the most part, rode that thing like a friggin' dirt bike. I was really impressed. So it was kind of fun. And, yeah, neat little motorcycle, and just explored some in American Fork Canyon. There are a million goddamn people over there. It's totally insane. Luckily, I didn't try to park a car. We just rode through on the motorcycle since I rode from my house. But goddamn it, there's just so many freaking people. Out of control. Go back to whatever shit ass state you came from. Don't need you here. What else did I do? Anything else cool? Played some golf. Nobody cares about that. That's really it. That's all I got.
All right. Well, we want to dive into some new shit because there's like a whole new batch of new shit again.
Yep. Always.
It's like it's summertime and people like bikes again and they start releasing new bikes.
Let's do it.
I've got one that I want to talk about real quick. I have a listener question. If anyone has experience with the Tailfin long top tube bag, I'd love to hear it. Because my only holdup in getting one is I don't like the way that it mounts. And if I'm freaking out about nothing, I'd love to know it. But I would love to be able to buy something off the shelf rather than having to pay someone to build one of these for me. But yeah.
What is it about the mounting that you don't like?
The mounts, it's designed to bolt on, and if you don't bolt it on, you bolt a little strap clip on. So then there's plastic touching your frame. And it just seems like it's going to be noisy, and there's going to be this section of the bag that's unsupported, and I don't know, I think that I could be wrong, but the way that I see it is like because it's elevated above the top tube, there could be less friction between the bag and the top tube, and especially something this large, I don't want it to be like canting over and falling off the side and shit. So, yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about the next new Shimano.
Oh, we could do that real quick. XT and Dior dropped. Not SLX.
SLX is, I guess, no more as a product. Cool. Product line. It is going away.
Okay.
All right. They went quick with that. They didn't fuck around for like a couple months like SRAM does.
I mean, they fucked around for 7 years.
Yeah, they fucked around for like 12 years.
When did XDR 12-speed come out? 2018?
I don't remember.
That sounds right. Could have been 17. 17, 18. Right in that ballpark.
Okay. Yeah, so there they are. They are finally catching up with SRAM, who also launched new shit this week. Force Axis Explore. So Force and Rival Explore 13-speed now exists. And Kenny, if I'm totally wrong, please slap me through the microphone, but I'm 99% sure that the shifters work with any drivetrain, irrelevant of 12 or 13 speed. They're just controllers. They all get that updated push system on the lever to get a much lighter brake feel. And then we get 13 speed in rival through red now.
That is accurate. So the gist is,
but only
in
Explore.
Yeah.
But only in Explore with the 1040s or whatever it is cassette.
That is correct. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I forget stuff. I officially, as of probably about a year ago, my brain is full on numbers and specifications. Like, I've just seen too much in my life. So some shit pops out when I put new stuff in there, just how it goes. So I believe you are exactly correct. 1046 Explore exists in Red, Force, and Rival now, and maybe freaking Apex. I don't know. Doesn't matter that much. And if you want 13 speeds, basically, you are going to run one by, and it's going to be a transmission-style derailleur, correct? It's like a road-specific transmission-style derailleur.
I believe so.
And then if you want to run, there's no such thing as 13 2x. Even though you think there would be, there's no such thing as that. There's just updated 12 speed. It's like an updated cassette. It uses the same flat top chain that's both 12 and 13 speed. You basically just get those updated levers. And yes, you're right. You can run mullet, whatever you want. They're just controllers. They're switches. You can run them anything you want. You could run it with old ass derailleur styled, like GX axis, non T type, if you wanted to. Whatever you want to do. No problem.
Yep. And for those of you in listener land, they're like, how did they do that? How did they fit 13 speeds where 12 went and they use the same chain? It's because it goes back to how did they put Eagle 12 speed where they put 11 speed? The largest cog is corniced over the end of the free hub.
They just keep dishing that bitch inboard.
And the reason that I think we're not going to see this in Road 2x is, with all the different wheels and yada, 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 SRAM can very confidently say, given free hub link, spoke, hub flange placement, yada, yada, with a 46, we can cornice with no chance of a properly tensioned wheel rubbing on the back of the cassette.
Maybe we'll see, for example, like a 40 or a 42 or something that's going to be a tighter ratio and 13 speed. Just a guess, but maybe not.
All right. Next thing. You guys ready for this?
Damn. I didn't really pay much attention to the fact that it is all transmission. How out of the loop I am. Bummer.
Well, you're not the only one. I kind of just never really thought about that much because we're not retrofitting like a whole lot of people set up to 1x Explore 13 speed. So, I mean, here and there we do, but I just don't see it enough. It's not like the mountain stuff. So it just never really occurred to me until the other day either that, yeah, I think it's all transmission UDH style stuff.
I've got a crystal ball question for you that you probably won't answer for me.
Yeah.
Specialized had a new Diverge at Unbound this year, but the bikes haven't been released yet. And now we have new SRAM 13 speed released in different price points. Do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah,
maybe the new Diverge.
I think there
are.
I thought there were a few Specialized bikes that dropped right when Force dropped. Maybe it was just a few revisions of models, but not like a whole new frame or something, just different build kits, basically. But I'm a little foggy on that. Again, I got too many. The amount of emails that I get per day that are bicycle related are out of control. So, again, my brain is nearing being full.
Well, maybe, because I know that from a dealer perspective, even prior to the new, maybe this isn't too inside baseball. Prior to Unbound, Diverges didn't have great stock. And now, but there hasn't been and they weren't hiding that bike at Unbound by any means. So I'm just really, really curious to see where this goes. I mean, the STR is not UDH. The Evo or all the E5, like the alloy frames, are not UDH. I don't know if the old one, if the old carbon was. No, it wasn't because they didn't do an Explore build in it. So, yeah, the Diverge carbon is not UDH. So I mean, and that's what they were teasing is, you know, probably because they didn't get a lot of info, probably more tire clearance, definitely UDH. So I don't know. I'm just curious now that SRAM has launched that stuff. I wonder where Specialized is in launching that next crop of bikes. And that's where I say you probably won't answer because I truly don't know. We're not a shop of that status and we don't really sell a lot of gravel bikes. So,
you know, surprisingly enough,
big deal.
Surprisingly enough, we don't sell a ridiculous amount of gravel here in Utah either. Definitely people do it, but it's not a humongous segment. I would say that gravel is just slightly smaller than the generic road category, which is also very tiny, honestly, these days.
Yeah, but we have 4 gravel bikes in stock.
Gotcha.
And 0 road bikes.
I just noticed something in this next article that I was going to bring up.
Well, let's dig into that then.
So the article is not really all that exciting. It's KS is releasing a more affordable wireless dropper post. They've already released the Lev circuit, which is $700, and they're now releasing the Rage circuit, which is $400, I believe. Yeah, $399. But the picture of this dude riding this cross country bike, it has transmission on it. Looks like the SL crank, but that chainring is not the thread-on style.
That is an XX crank.
Okay, so it's not XXSL.
Right, so okay. An XX crank is carbon arms, spindle-based power meter with that chainring. The SL is the...
Because he does have some chunky pedals on there, so that looks like maybe he has power meter pedals on it.
Well, and based on that photo, that is not a power meter crank or the cork drive side plug is not installed.
Yeah.
But that crank is available in power.
All right. That's all I was going to say about that. So KS has a new seat post. And it's funny because in the article, like they say over and over, they have not provided weights for this yet. The weight is not listed on the dealer site. Like, they say that a couple of times, so...
Wait, that might be an SL crank. It's just not the power SL.
Okay. I thought the SL only came with the power.
No, because here it is.
You can get the crank with non-power.
All right.
But I was pretty right that the SL power is the thread-on, and then the... But the SL doesn't come in a spindle power.
You got a bunch
correct?
Of options. Okay. You can do spindle power. You can do the 8-bolt... 8-bolt, 4-bolt, the 104 Spider, the older one that was very popular forever. You can bolt that bitch right on there, and you can do the new fancy thread-on one.
Yeah.
Where you could run the spindle power meter with power pedals and power Spider. Have 3 power meters on
oh
that
my
bitch.
God. You have that's some DC Rainmaker
shit.
Some
DC
right there.
Rainmaker stuff, run multiple head units.
My God.
All right. So the thing I thought was funny in this article, for one, they haven't published a weight, and I'm guessing that at a $400 wireless dropper post, you're going to be able to take it out of your bike and use it as a fucking weapon.
This dropper post doubles as a hammer.
And
it'd probably be better than the Abbey Tools titanium hammer.
God damn! That man's got a family, Kenny. The neighbor has to come over and hang pictures for him.
And they do mention in this article that the hydraulic cartridge, KS says that it is easy to replace if you ever need to.
If I ever need to replace
when
the cartridge.
When you need to replace it and, you know, it's like a year from now and they're like, oh, yeah, we don't make those anymore. Sorry.
God, I can't wait. I'm just going to go on record here and say that... You should not buy a $400 electronic dropper post. It's 2025. You shouldn't buy a KS dropper post. So when you put those two together, you just shouldn't buy it. And then if you had $400 to spend on a dropper post, I want you to show me on a graph where a one-up post with the new SRAM lever isn't better.
Yeah,
just show me. Show me on the graph.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, if you have $400 for a dropper post, just get one with a fucking cable. Like, bikes are good. They're all made to be relatively easy to put a cable housing through for
almost
a cable
no
actuated post.
New bikes are difficult to run droppers on anymore. I can't remember the last newish bike that's hard to run a dropper post in.
Yeah. I mean, like, even my e-bike, if you take the battery out, the cables are like right there under it. It's easier than a normal bike. Like, you just put the fucking housing through. It's right there. It's not hard. Even bikes that aren't really specifically made for it, they're usually not that hard either. Like, there's like some kind of a cable port at the head tube where, you know, you can like take the cable holder out and, you know, like grab whatever you're fishing through the frame, or the other way around, you can drop a cable down, you know, from the head tube down into the seat tube and then throw a magnet down there and pull the cable through and use that as a guide to get your housing through. But most of them are some kind of a tube and tube where you just shove the shit through the frame. So it's not a big deal to use a cable actuated dropper. They're lighter. Like, in the past, people had problems with like their batteries rubbing on the rear tire under compression. Like, it's just less shit to worry about.
Well, they're also stupid because you could just flip a reverb around and it's totally like fine.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I just say, even just based on weight, just use a cable actuated dropper. It's not like electronic ones are just that much better. You know, it's just like another thing that you can do to your bike if you just want fewer cables, but it's, I don't know. I don't think the function of them is superior enough to warrant. If you have one that works now, I wouldn't worry about, you know, it's not necessarily, it's more of a lateral move to go to a wireless post, I think, than it is necessary for better performance.
All right. Yeah, I'm not into any KS products these days. I mean, I think the only thing they make would be if you wanted to put a dropper on a commuter bike with the little under the nose of the saddle, like the taint tickler style.
Oh, yeah.
The lever under the saddle. Yeah, buy one of those. They're like $100. But also, you can buy something from Amazon probably for the same price. And then when it goes bad, you just throw it away and buy a new one. I know that like Right to Repair is cool, but like if you've ever tried tracking down KS small parts, you'd much rather crush your vice or your thumb in a vice than do that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to talk too much smack. We've done it in the past on KS, but you know, they were reasonable. They were a reasonable choice 10 years ago ish. But there's just too many people that have far surpassed them in price and reliability and serviceability and availability and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, unfortunately, I think KS is kind of irrelevant except for the $100 he posts, like Matt said.
Yeah, it's like the, you know, we talk about the envy effect. That's like when you buy something expensive, you kind of feel like you have to like it. I think I'd call it like the Stans effect, like where when Stans tubeless rims first came out, that was like the best fucking rim you could get for tubeless wheels. And now it's like, man, there's like so many better things you can get other than a Stans rim. And like, yeah, I think KS is in that same boat, you know, like, yeah, when dropper post first got started to really
when the only thing you could get was a first gen reverb that was exactly like as bad as you thought it was, or a gravity dropper that was a peg in a hole.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's like that. Like, so when Stans, like when Stans rims came out, you could get Mavic wheels.
Yeah, yeah. You want a 15mm internal rim with proprietary ass spokes and a plastic free hub body? Go for it.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go into the next one. Brembo.
Brembo brakes.
Actually,
those things are, is that like a very small person working on that brake, or is it actually the size of like a motorcycle brake?
I think it's gigantic.
That is a normal, that's a normal grip, and that's a brake. Like
I thought at first when I saw this, I was like, oh man, is that like a little person as a mechanic? No, that brake is just giant.
I mean,
like someone got their 12-year-old to adjust this brake for the photo.
Well, I think Brembo stops like race cars and airplanes, so
I bet they're probably pretty good.
I'll also say that the Brembos on my Husky are recalled because they snap off. So there's that,
well,
too.
Maybe they're not good.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm back and forth about it.
Well, I'm pretty back and forth about, I mean, the thing is they're not being sold.
Oh, are they not going to be like a,
I'm sure that this will come out. I would be very shocked if these do not see the light of day in some fashion for retail.
Well, at this time, they're not for sale.
Yeah, that is correct. Specialized gravity team will be riding the prototypes for the 2025 season.
How about that specialized friggin' demo with the Atherton tubes on it?
I didn't see that.
Yep. Also very prototype.
Here in this same article. Yeah. I mean, whatever.
I'm not a DH bike guy, but that's fucking hot.
It is. It's a really good looking bike. If given the opportunity to ride a DH bike at the DH park, I would say absolutely. So, yeah, it'd be rude not to. Also, in the race truck, they have their repair stand mounted from the ceiling. That was really blowing my mind. There's the double-headed repair stand. The bar is moving upwards, not downwards. I was trying to figure out this.
I see the handles on
the drawer or cabinet in the background, and like what kind of Photoshop bullshit happened there. And then I realized the park logo is upside down.
I was going to say, you can tell that it's upside down by the way that it is.
Exactly. Well, but it took me a second to realize what was going on. In talking about Specialized, though, I've got one that I really want to.
I hope they kept that plate. I hope they got that 400-pound plate bolted to the ceiling.
Dude, I wasn't going to bring this up, but at one point, so the wash room, indoor bike wash at Wheat Ridge, the whole ass plate was mounted to the ceiling, not just the small plate.
That's freaking sick.
And apparently the maintenance guy was a little odd. Great dude. His house burned down in an electrical fire at some point.
Uh-oh.
But they were like, yeah, just mount it to the ceiling and then it won't be a problem with the drain. And he's like, all right. And like 2 hours later, he's like, that was a chore. And they walked in and he had mounted the whole fucking thing to the ceiling.
So for any of our listeners out there, so park repair stands, like the whatever, the shop repair stand, not like your at home fold out type stand. They have a large metal base plate.
And I think it weighs 140 pounds.
That the post mounts to, and it is really fucking heavy. I mean, it's made so you can like hoss on a bike and it doesn't move around a lot.
115 pounds, yeah. 62 kilograms.
If you want to play a fun game, because it's happened to me, and you're trying to build one of those stands and it's new, and you take that plate out and it hits the ground and there's nothing attached to it, you can't pick it up.
You have to like put a crowbar under it and lift it.
I don't remember what I did.
Rock bar.
Yeah, you just can't pick it up because it's flat and it's heavy as shit.
Yeah.
It's like a giant penny.
I can carry a single repair stand very easily by myself. I've moved the double base by myself when it was still in cardboard, and I got chastised for doing it by myself by a listener who's probably shaking his head right now. So, but going back to Specialized, I'm calling it now. If the camber doesn't come out again, they've totally lost the plot, because 2026 Stump Jumper 15 is all overforked Evo. So
maybe like e-camber 29er?
No, I just want a camber. I want a lightweight trail bike again. I don't think the Evo is going to do it. The Epic Evo is going to do what people want it to do.
Yeah, like that leaves a big gap.
Yeah, because you have a 130, 120 bike and then a 160, 150 bike.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they need that like, I don't know, 140, 130 bike in there.
Which would be a camber.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if we follow their old naming of what lands between the Epic and the Stump Jumper, it was a camber.
Yep.
So it's going to be the dream bike, man. It's going to have... it's going to have a Monarch R rear shock on it, but it's going to be the electronic version, and it's just going to have it's going to be electronically actuated peg in a hole to lock it out. And it's going to have SX transmission, which runs on a single AAA.
S1000.
No, it's going to be
S500.
No, SX. I want SX.
What about S500X? And let's see, what else would it have?
Maybe a 30 stanchion fork.
It would be a Judy. It'd be a 140 Judy. QR.
All right, can we move on? We got listener questions now?
No, I have more shit we're going to talk about.
Jesus.
And in speaking with Shimano finally doing something, new Saints were finally spotted.
It looks like a Maven.
So 13 years later, the Saint might be coming out again.
Let me try to find this thing. Was this on the old pink bike?
It was.
All right.
And yeah, it in the joke of it looks like a Session, it looks like a Maven. I mean, it's a huge...
The big break with like a close... Like you have to take the pads out the bottom because the top is solid. And...
Mm-hmm. Oh,
it seems like there are... We talked about it on a couple shows ago. The amount of tuned mass dampers out there right now, it's incredible. It's like on 75% of the DH bikes. It's crazy. so many different versions of it. Kind of interesting.
Yeah. And a real quick one that I want to throw out real quick. Cervelo launched a new gravel bike, a new Aspero 5, and it is supposedly 34 watts faster than the old Aspero 5, which is just kind of going back to my jokes on watts from the last one. Yeah, turns out aero is everything. I was not very aero today. All right, we want to go to, let's see, we talked about that. We talked about, we don't care about that. And then, yeah, let's go to listener questions. Let's do it.
Do it!
All right, so we had a little update from listener Angie. She says, just wanted to say thanks for answering my listener question about whether to fix an old bike or buy a new one a while back. My partner did listen, and he totally realized it was my question, and he was the guy who knew you from the bike shop. Anyway, thanks. You all are great. Entertaining plus good info. You
the
are
the guy that knows us from the bike shop. Good thing there's only one.
This is from Matt. He says, any good baggy short recommendations? I'm pretty average height and weight, and previous favorite was the Fox Ranger. Seems they changed it, and it no longer has the cargo pocket, so after tearing my current pair on a ride, I'm in need of a new option. Preferably a short with four pockets, no bib, and doesn't go much past the knees. Tried the Specialized cargo short, and they were far too long and narrow in the thigh for me. I don't know. I don't wear baggy shorts because I think wearing two layers just because you don't want to be gay in spandex is stupid. So I can't tell you. I've tried like multiple different pairs of baggy shorts, and I just run into the same thing. I'm like, why am I sweating even more? Because I just wanted to look cool in baggy shorts.
Oh my God, Fox, how many times do I have to say no? I don't know. I'm a little bit out of the loop on what is cool.
I'm
a little lost.
Do you wear?
I don't.
You definitely wear some.
Nope. I had a pair of Rangers. They were a little small. I gave them to Ryan. And then the pants I was wearing today are old Fox Ranger pants that I cut off below knee pad length after I melted a hole in them riding the trials bike.
Okay.
So those are homemade.
So you get Fox Ranger pants and you just cut them off into shorts.
The new Fox Ranger pant is going to be a two pocket pant. The old Ranger pant was a three pocket pant where it had two on the front, like your two normal front pockets, and then a third on your left hand side that was a zipper pocket. And they now just have two, I think, zipper pockets on the side. I don't remember. They're just pants. I don't think about them a lot. But
Kenny, what shorts do you wear?
I don't think I have any like riding specific shorts anymore as far as baggies. I just have like shorts. I want to say I've got a couple of the cool brand, KUHL, probably an umlaut in there somewhere.
Yeah.
And those are good. They're kind of stretchy. I basically have, my favorites are just board shorts because I can swim in them. If you do sweat in them, they usually dry out really fast. They're usually slightly stretchy. They're almost, Andrea, if you remember those, I think they were Scott branded shorts that we both had way back when.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I still have mine.
Yeah. Mine finally, I wore through the ass. But yeah, they're that mildly stretchy type stuff, except a little bit thinner than that. So I'm happy with cool shorts. They're good.
And there is a short that I've written in a little bit that I just remembered when you said that. Let's see if I can find it real quick.
I don't know if you're going to find bike shorts that have cargo pockets. I mean, yeah. I'm not anti-cargo pocket. I just think that...
That shit's just going to bang around on your knees a lot.
Yeah, most of them have some kind of like a vertical zipper pocket, if they have one, like kind of down on the leg.
Yeah, how do you put shit in your pants when you ride? That seems really weird to me.
I can put gloves, because I have a disdain for climbing in gloves, my gloves go in my pockets for sure. The pants I'm thinking of, or the shorts I'm thinking of, are the Patagonia men's baggies, and they come in 5 and 7 inch. And you probably would want 7 inch. A 5 inch short will not cover the ends of your bibs or chamois, whatever you're wearing underneath. A 7 inch probably will, and, or when you're just standing around, a 7 inch will probably cover most of your chamois. But my only real complaint with the the Patagonia baggies is they are a three pocket short. So two front, one rear, and the one on the rear is on the right hand side. And I put my cell phone in my back left pocket. So I have a pair of these, but I rarely wear them for that reason. My phone lives in my back left pocket, and if it can't go there, it vaporizes.
All right. So, sorry, Matt, can't help you a whole lot with your...
Dude, just get some scissors out. Just knuck if you buck.
We had a listener, Brad. It sounds like he might have bought one of your bikes because he says he waxed your chain, and you're wrong about wax. Because it's clean, and his kid won't get dirty when they touch it, and he doesn't ride in the rain. We don't need to get on that rant.
Great. I'm glad you love chain wax. Just, you know, Kenny says he only has so much space in his brain. One, I don't have children, so no one's going to touch my chain. Two, even if you're not riding in the rain, where I live, I do ride. Like today, I rode through a...
We have three or four water crossings.
Well, and one of those was probably 100-ish yards long where the runoff was just following the road. It happened in my Wolf Tooth days.
High country rides are generally intermittently wet.
Yep.
Just because of
runoff
springs
and
runoff and whatnot. So we have someone who wanted to discuss, he says, not to get into politics, but what are your thoughts on the proposal to sell off some public lands? Maybe I speak for all of us, maybe I don't, because I have some pretty extreme political views in that I just want to let everyone know it doesn't matter who the fuck is in office. It doesn't matter if they are Republican or Democrat. If someone is a politician, they do not have your best interests in mind. They're not your friend. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't give a fuck about your public lands. This goes for every politician of every party. They don't care. They are a puppet for corporations, billionaires, those types. So, yeah, you should definitely send out emails. Let the politicians who are putting this forth know that you're unhappy about it. And the only reason why they might reverse their wishes to do this is because if enough people are pissed off, then maybe they won't get reelected and they won't have that position of getting under the table money from billionaires and corporations. So that's why you should. I mean, it's fucking terrible. Like if you look at, and there's
easy.
There's an interactive map out where you can go and look at the lands that would be eligible for sale. That map was put out by
the way,
I think the Wilderness map, Society.
The map is just all BLM and Forest Service land, isn't it?
I haven't looked at it.
I glanced at it, and I'm like, that just seems like all of it. So I think they're just saying some amount of that could be up for grabs, is my understanding. It's not. It doesn't mean that all of that is gone.
And
that's the way I saw it, but maybe I looked at an inaccurate map. I don't know.
And I'm just going to, because we don't need to get too in the weeds here, I'm going to go with what I hope can be a decent closing argument is Andrea is correct. Politicians do not have our best interests in mind. And at the end of the day, things are pretty crummy. Understand that what's happening right now is referred to as anchoring. You don't go to a job interview and say, I want to make $100,000. If you want to make $100,000, you ask for $115,000. They counter it $80,000 or $90,000. Then you settle on a pay benefits package at 102, and everybody feels like they won. And they're not going to sell off 258 million acres of land. What they're doing is they're getting everyone whipped into a frenzy. So when they sell off 15 million acres, everyone feels like they won, and they know what they're doing, is my point.
But at the end of the day, it's a twofold thing, and maybe you guys can add something. One is it's a short-term money grab for the government, which you could argue is maybe that's not a bad thing. Obviously, it is in a long term. And number two is it gives the opportunity for probably very wealthy people and or corporations or whatever to buy said land so that they can make more money on it in the future, either by reselling it or by using it and extracting resources or doing whatever they want to do, right? So either way, it's about money. That's what it's about, clearly. I think we all know that, exactly. But I just wanted to put that on the table.
Yeah. And like the entire, I don't know, I'm going to get to conspiracy theory here, but I'm going to do it anyway. The entire us versus them politics, it's just something, it's like a mass mind control of the people. So if you keep everyone where they're like, I'm this and I hate the other people because they always do stupid shit and they're going to end my way of life, how I like to live. Then you just always, like, until we stop thinking us versus them as like Republican versus Democrat or Democrat versus Republican or whatever, until we stop thinking that way, we're not going to realize that the us versus them is all of us who aren't billionaires versus the government.
Yeah,
and billionaires.
Because
like the billionaires who control the government.
Civil unrest that is fueled by political tensions or racial tensions is a great distraction from the potential civil unrest that would happen based on wealth inequality. And it turns out there's a lot more people that are inequalitized that could take up their pitchforks, or in this grand country, their AR-15s, and actually make a... you know, let's say impactable change. But with that said, I'm going to throw in one other quick thing. When you see things change in other countries, I saw a map today and I only scrolled past it, but it was like showing that one country is like the size of like, I can't remember, like maybe France and Texas are the same size. Like, so, you know, that would be Texas being a whole ass country. And then it was like, that was, and England was like way smaller, like, so it's like the size of Georgia or something. I'm making it up, but my point being, we are really just 50 little countries masquerading as one, and that's probably something that makes it harder for us to all feel a, you know, common connection. And I say that because until my family had been to the West, they didn't understand how beautiful the West was. They thought they knew, and then they felt it. And when someone looks at a map and sees that a bunch of the West is being sold off, they'll be like, ah, who cares? But when you have a much smaller country where you can, you know,
drive from one side to the other in a day,
or drive from one country through another to the third in a day, then you really get a, you know, you have a little bit more.
So I'll say I like a lot of things about a lot of places. So I liked a lot of things about Memphis, Tennessee, for example, and I've lived in New Jersey and I've been to many other places. I like a lot of stuff on the East Coast. I think there's a lot of cool stuff in the central U.S. But one of the big things, again, for the stuff that we're into, clearly, it's why we all live out here now, just the, it limits what you can do so much. If everything is private land, you can't just go ride your dirt bike wherever you want. That ain't happening, right? It's going to be at a private track, or you're going to have to know someone who is super rich and has land and lets you ride on it, right? The freedom is pretty damn real out in the West of all this land that we have. So if that starts getting slowly eroded, that is a humongous problem.
All right. Well, I think that was a good one to end on.
No, let's end on something a little more cheery.
Well, that was all of our listener questions. I mean, I can read Angie's again, where she's like, you guys are awesome and thanks for helping.
I thought I had something positive in my mind. But I really did, actually, and I forgot what it was. But anyway, it's all good.
All right. Well, we're going to read patrons and wrap it up. So our patrons, starting at $10 a month, we have Zozo, Tom P. Ornstar, Tom's P. Timothy, the patron known as Aaron _, Ty, Tennessee Zach, Taylor Zwift, Taper Boar Pro, Skunk in Your Trap, Samuel, Ryan, Ride Time Extended,
Pork Chop Sandwiches,
Noah, My Pal Dal, MTV Shenanigans,
Mike Jones,
Ligma, Viva, Leland, Josh, Jim the Fucked Up Truck Guy, JC, Jared, Jake D, Holden, Two Dicks, Green Giant, Gordon, Frank the Tank, Fart Noises, Eric, Chunk Norris, Captain Fickle, Cam Irish One, Bill, Bearded Bag O' Dicks, Barrel O' Dicks, Angry JRA Forever, AJ, Aaron, A Very Prominent Stud Horse, _, at $11.11 per month, we've got Mustard on the Beat, Ho, Patamelon Disco at 14 Australian, Dean at 1650 Australian, and at $20 a month, we've got Scott, Pooperinch, Joe, I want a mustache ride from Burt Reynolds. Brian, $26.06 per month. Alice's Goose Nuggets and Meat Rice Emporium. Harley at 30, Troy at 31, and Six Pack Outdoors. We kudos our own rides at Viddy. All right. That's been a long episode. You guys ready to wrap it
down?
Yep.
You heard the man. Thank you all for listening and good night.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.
There's some shit coming out of your crate.